So today, as you guys saw from the Makoros, we're discussing a famous tshuva from the three-day Eish. Im mutar le'narim v'narot lashir biyachad shirei kodesh. Can we have, you know, the kohen kumzitz? Are we allowed to sit around the bonfire, men and women together, and we're all singing our zmirot together? That is really the question we're going to deal with. This is, I would argue, amongst the three-day Eish, we'll discuss his biography in a minute, but the three-day Eish, this is probably his most famous tshuva. If you're going to say, like, when people say, oh, the three-day Eish, this is like the go-to tshuva of the three-day Eish that people quote. Oh, the three-day Eish's tshuva on co-ed singing, co-ed camps, this is the most famous tshuva. The one maybe exception is we'll see a little bit from, you know, historically what he was dealing with as one of the main poskim in Europe, post-Holocaust, that he has a lot of, if you look at, like, statistically, the amount of tshuvot that he has about sugyos, about agunot and gittin, sugyos about women who they couldn't find their husbands after the war, or people who needed a get, those are also very often quoted, but the people who quote his tshuvot in sugyos of agunot and gittin are really much more dealing with the world of dayanus, and people who are sitting down and on beit and trying to be matir agunot, but in the, I guess we'll call it the general rabbinic world, this is really his go-to famous tshuva that is often discussed. On that note, this is also a tshuva, which we'll see in a little bit, that in my opinion is up there in not only often quoted tshuvot, but very oftenly misquoted tshuvot. People often quote his bottom line psak and skip the first, you know, 5 or 6 pages before he gets to the psak, and kind of skew, in my opinion, the metzias that was being discussed and his psak. Similarly, I quoted the other day, I remember too, there's a tshuva of Rav Avadia that people always quote, oh, Rav Avadia was matir, this is your set this week, so I'll mention it. Rav Avadia was matir, woman to wear pants. Rav Avadia was not matir, woman to wear pants. His question is, do I wear a short skirt? Do I wear a mini skirt that barely covers, you know, my tochas or my thigh? Or should I wear baggy sweatpants? I think we could all agree that, logically speaking, the baggy sweatpants are going to be more tzanua than the mini skirt. So people often quote that Rav Avadia, oh, Rav Avadia was matir wearing pants, but instead of a skirt, that's not really the case. If you look at the question he was asked, it's short skirt or sweatpants. So similar here, people often quote, the Sridi Eish said X, but we'll see that there's a lot more that went into what got to his bottom line psak, and that's something that's just always interesting to know the background as opposed to just the often quoted concept, and that's why, you know, it's fun to see these tshuvot inside, to see really how they process the sugya and what's going on. The Sridi Eish, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, anyone want to guess, where does the name Sridi Eish come from? Anyone know what the Hebrew word sarid means? Yeah, sarid means survivor, something that, like, that remained. Lisrod is to, like, to survive. So Sridi Eish, a survivor of the fire, what does that mean? Holocaust. His entire life work, this is his most famous sefer, we'll discuss some of his other sefer, is called Sridi Eish because he was a Holocaust survivor, and that was a major part of his halachic, you know, guidance. We'll see it in this tshuva as well. And just part of his whole life is something, you know, it strongly impacted what he went through and who he was the fact that he lived through the Holocaust. He was born in 1884 and passed away in 1966. He was born in Poland, and then he learned really in Slobodka and in Mir. In Slobodka, he was actually a ben bayit by the altar of Slobodka, where he lived in his house and really, you know, was incredibly close with the altar. And then later on, he actually went to Mir, where he learned with the altar's son, who later would be the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, Lazer Yehuda Finkel. And so really, he was considered an Niloy. He was a genius from a very young age. But on that note, he was also someone who, for many people, can relate to the struggle and difficulty. At that time, the struggle of the generation was with the Enlightenment, with the Haskalah. And this is something that he very strongly struggled with. And that's why, if you note, in the biography written by Professor Mark Shapiro, it's called, the name of the biography is Between the Yeshiva World and Modern Orthodoxy. This is something he really struggled with. Not only that, the altar of Slobodka felt that if he went too far, as in if he did not, you know, marry off Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg then, he would not have been religious. So as a result, they basically offered him a shidduch when he was 22 with a 16-year-old girl who was the daughter of a Rav, basically as a last-ditch effort to keep him religious. True story. They had a really, really rough marriage. Lots of stories. They wanted to divorce. I don't remember if they did divorce. A lot of interesting stories. But he very much had this kind of, when we discussed last night in the Morning of Uchim, this complex relationship with Judaism and intellectual knowledge. And this led to a lot of strife in how people relate to his svarim. On one hand, he was very Haredi. He grew up Haredi. Later on, he was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Hildesheimer Seminary in Berlin. Very interesting personality. Very much has this little bit of a duality. He wrote a sefer called Mechkarim B'Talmud, right? Studies in Talmud, where he basically, in a very academic way, before really academia developed the way we have it today in Talmud, the fact that he wrote more or less very intellectual academic pieces going through Sugyot and Shas was not something that was classically found by someone who learned in Slobodka or Mir. You know, that was something very, very interesting. Later on, he was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Hildesheimer Seminary in Berlin, where he actually strongly pushed the Rav Hirsch's idea of Torah im Derech Eretz. What's interesting about that is when he was younger, he wrote an article arguing that Torah im Derech Eretz is not a Torah idea, that's an antithesis of Torah. And when he was younger, when he was learning in Slobodka Mir, he was anti-Torah im Derech Eretz. Later on, he was the Rosh Yeshiva in Hildesheimer, where he was preaching Torah im Derech Eretz. This is kind of a struggle that we see a lot in his life, where he has this shift. In 1934, he was actually offered to go to London to be the Av Beit Din of the London Beit Din, which would have probably, honestly, shifted a lot of his Torah, because he would have then at least avoided being in Europe, or in mainstream Europe, mainland Europe, for the Holocaust. If he was already in London, that would have definitely made a shift. But he pushed it down. He rejected it, sorry. In 1939, when trying to escape the Holocaust, he ended up basically stuck in the Warsaw Ghetto. But he never ended up, in the end, he never went to any of the concentration camps because he was a Russian citizen. He ended up in a Russian prisoner of war camp and avoided the Holocaust. After the Holocaust, he went to I don't know how you pronounce it, honestly, in Switzerland. And there he lived the rest of his life till he passed away. And there he really was instrumental in poskening many of the Shilohs, particularly, as you mentioned before, the aspects of a Gunot after the war. That was really a huge effort on his part. So today, we're going to try and discuss this tshuva of his regarding co-ed singing. So we said earlier, the question came to him really shortly after the war from this organization called Yeshurun. Yeshurun, we could put today, we'll call that NTSY, we'll call that Bnei Akiva, whatever organization you guys did or didn't do growing up, that was we'll call it a co-ed kiruv organization, trying to bring people closer to Torah, trying to engage people in their Yiddishkeit a little bit. And so he's asked the question, basically, that according to the Shitat Chinuch, that was Noeg and Ashkenaz, Lifnei HaChorban, right? He's saying, this is the way that education in the world of Ashkenaz happened before the Chorban. What's the Chorban here referring to? Destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? No. He's referring to the Holocaust, right? Very strongly, you see that we're dealing with a tshuva. We're talking about a post-Holocaust revival effort of Jewish community, and that is a very, very strong aspect in this tshuva. Okay? And he says we're talking about France. In France, there was this organization called Yeshurun. They had these co-ed camps, and after the war, there were lots of different communities that shifted from A to B. So we'll see, and he'll discuss this throughout, there were educational differences and hashkafic differences between the different countries in Ashkenaz. We have on one hand, we'll see, Poland and Hungary, and on the other hand, the other countries of Lita. And within them, there were very, very different, you know, understandings of education and how they related to certain co-ed aspects. So he says, now I get a shiloh from this Haredi community that just post-war ends up in France, and they see there's this co-ed youth group going on, and they say, this is totally us, sir. How can you allow this? So the question, he says, they're asking two questions. Iror echad, the first one, is neged surat ha'irgun hazeh, shum mishatef banim ubanot davoda, magdam la'agudachat. Right, the first question, the second is, I don't get it. They're having a co-ed camp. You're going to have boys and girls in the same camp. They're one conglomerate unit. How could that be allowed? That's question one. The existence of co-ed camps. That is the minority of the tshuva. And then two, which is really the focus point, is the iror neged ha'minag shenagu. I'm arguing against the minag they have. She'abanim va'abanot mezamrim yachad zmirot shel seudat shabbat o zmirot kodesh acherot. That they get together and they have a nice kumzit. They're sitting at the Shabbos meal and, you know, they're all in the Chadar Ochel together and they're singing. Has anyone here been to a co-ed camp? By raise of hand. Okay, so that's like 80% beseder. So you guys are familiar with the setting. You're in a, right? Has anyone, of those of you that went to a co-ed camp, was there anyone here who they did not have co-ed singing? That's what I assumed. Okay. That's 0%. Yeah. Okay. No, I'm saying this from my experience in different camps. That's also been the case. So that's a lot of that's based off this 3D ish, and we'll see whether or not, honestly, pshat in this Riddish applies or not to modern day camps. That's going to be seen. So now we skip to Bet. He says, I'm going to start with, we're going to relate to the first things first, the first about the Coed camps. He says, it's a good question. You're asking whether or not the existence of Coed camps or any, you know, Coed existence, should that ever happen? And he says, it's a fair question that you're asking because we know that the Torah tells us that really we should try and separate gender, men and women together. He says, the Gemara tells us that the Gemara in Sukkah, which is often quoted, particularly in the realms of Mechitza and other aspects, the Gemara says they did a Tikkun Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash on Sukkot. What was the Tikkun Gadol? That they had the women in the Ezrat Nashim and they had the men downstairs. There was a separation between them. So the Gemara tells us the Tikkun Gadol, the great remedy, the great fix that happened in the times of Chazal was that they separated the men and the women. That seems to be a really good thing. The Gemara then continues, as brought down in, as Paskin, Halacha Lamaisa in the Shulchan Aruch. This is continuation of that Gemara. Chayavim beitin hamid shotrim beregalim shelo yitarvu anashim v'nashim bebateim ubesimcha mitam zeh nimne'u bekol hakilot kedoshot liyaseir chaburot sheyesh behem tarovet anashim v'nashim kayadua. Okay? He quotes the continuation of this Gemara as Paskin the Shulchan Aruch that the community has an obligation during these times of general communal gathering such as the Shalosh Regalim or other simchas, maybe we'll say potentially that would apply to weddings, but, you know, other simchas, etc. And we have a halachic obligation as a community to put up, you know, shotrim. We're going to have like little police officers walking around giving out, you know, fines, sneas police up. You guys are too close, not social distancing. But that's something that we're, you know, that's Paskin Halacha L'maisa in the Shulchan Aruch. And he says, regarding the second question, we're discussing a question of Kol B'Shisha Erva. And then he says there's a whole discussion about Kol B'Shisha Erva, that whether or not, what is the Isser going to actually apply, okay? Whether or not it's just a married woman, what about a single woman, and how that actually applies. And he says, the Rambam already tells us that it's Usser always, you know, for everyone, especially today, right? The Be'er Sheva, he says, explained that there's no difference between married and single woman. Because today, almost, you know, every single non-married woman is going to be considered a nida. Talking at times of Chazal, when you had non-married women would go to the mikvah because we held dina tumah tahara. Historically, whether or not people have kept dina tumah tahara in their homes or not is an interesting question. But realistically speaking, if you wanted to bake bread and you were tameh nida, so you're when you start mixing the dough with the water, you're now going to make the bread tameh. So the woman, the young, you know, you wanted to make bread, you wanted to bake challah with your mother, you would have to go to the mikvah with your mother. This is going to come up in different sugyos and nida about that the girls, we shouldn't do certain things about tefillah because you might mistake, you know, your daughters might misunderstand the halacha. So to hear, he's going to say, today everyone's a nida, women don't go to the mikvah before marriage, so it doesn't really make a difference because anyhow, even if she's not married, she's still going to be considered an arayot, she's going to be considered erva of nida. So then he continues, and now he explains a little bit about the organization, and this is where things in my mind get very, very interesting. Mikomakom, when I was discussing this organization, Yeshura, horeti lahem she'mshichot pulatam. I told them, continue the holy work you're doing. You're doing an amazing job. You're keeping Jews religious. This is amazing. Keep it up. So now it's going to be, well, how did you do that? Didn't we just say, tikkun gadol, we should have separation between the sexes, we should keep men and women separate? Wait, you told them maybe they could, right? He doesn't say necessarily whether or not specifically singing, but he's saying, you know, your organization's good, keep it going. Okay? And he says, because this is the way that Gedolei Ashkenaz had chinuch. And this is, they were tzaddikim, they were Gedolei Torah, and they were only doing things l'shem shemayim. It's not like they were like, oh, we're going to bring the men and women together and it'll be a nice party, right? How many people have heard, like, people that go on, like, a Shabbaton just because there's going to be some guys there? Or, you know, they go because it's a social scene. No, they're not coming to this camp for a social scene. They're coming to the camp for a religious awakening to try and tap into their Judaism in a little bit of a deeper way. And he says, what we're trying to do is latzil et hanoar misakanata tmi'a sheitpashta ba'ashkenaz bayamim va'idei kein hatzalah kamen v'ashot mi'Yisrael v'yitzlichu l'karvam l'Torah. Right? We're dealing with a case where people are totally off the derech. We're talking about non-religious Jews post-Holocaust. He says later on, the intermarriage rates in France in 1950, in his time, were through the roof. They weren't religious. They just seen what happened to Jews in the Holocaust, right? Every little thing right now, it's a din of hatzalas nefashos. This is something that's so important. The Gemara already discusses whether or not you can potentially go out to save someone who is about to intermarry on Shabbos. Can you be mechallel Shabbos to bring them back in? this is a real, right? That's considered a form of sakanas nefashos for someone who's going off the derech, who's going to stop being religious. That's something that we take very seriously. He says, "Gedoli Ashkenaz Yibikim Amumchin B'Chachmat Achinuch." And he says, the Ashkenazi Gedolim, the Ashkenazi Rebbeim, they were masters of education. They knew educational philosophy. They knew what's going on. It's not like they're just saying, "Oh, yeah, I think it's fine for because you know, I don't really care about the halacha." They're saying that educationally, this is going to be more beneficial. Okay, this is something that comes up a lot today in discussion about co-ed schools. How that this is kind of like the catch 22 educationally in co-ed schools. They say the guys behave better in co-ed schools than in all-male schools, but co-ed schools, educationally, are actually worse for the girls because of distractions from the guys and the guys, whatever. It's an interesting catch-22 of balancing societal needs when maybe for the guys it's better if the girls are there, but the girls would be better in an all-girls school. Interesting, you know, if we're talking about educational philosophy and sociology, how we should, you know, create societies. Fascinating discussion, but he's saying the Ashkenazi Gedolim, when they were dealing with these questions, right, we said there's a split between different theories of schools of thought. They really had a huge debate on this. Okay? And he says, because they knew the generation, they knew what people needed, they knew what was going on. And he says, the other side, right, the other side of the Ashkenazim, right? He said they knew what was going on with the Enlightenment. They knew the difficulty. They were fighting an uphill battle about students, about non-religious Jews going to university where they're learning all these things, and they're gonna basically completely forget their Judaism. This was an uphill battle. We need to fight it now. This is so important. And they understood the call of the generation, and that's something. He said not everyone understood that question. And he says he remembers that Rav Yisrael Salanter came to Ashkenaz, and he saw Rav Hildesheimer, the founder of the Hildesheimer Seminary, which was like the modern Orthodox seminary, aka, you know, school, yeshiva, in Berlin. And he saw Rav Hildesheimer himself, the Rosh Yeshiva, he was giving a Tanakh shir to the woman. He was giving a Shulchan Aruch halacha shir to the woman. And Rav Yisrael Salanter, later on, he said, what was the line? Im yavo mi rabbeinei lita lanhi kem be'edato v'adai she'yarvu oto mekunato v'chein adin. Rav Yisrael Salanter said, if where I come from, in the other areas of Ashkenaz, they saw the Rosh Yeshiva giving a shir to the woman, they would kick him out of his job. What, the Rosh Yeshiva is going to give a Tanakh shir, a halacha shir to the woman? That would never even, he would lose his job immediately. And so the Sri Yashin says, V'atamu mishum et lasot l'Hashem hefriu toratecha. The Pasuk tells us that there are certain times when the generation needs something. There's a time and place for everything. We have to sometimes come up and be makel for certain issues when things are going away. So far we've seen the Sri Deish comes out very strongly, basically saying there was an educational debate on how we relate to co-education between different communities in Ashkenaz. That led to some of the strife. But part of it is we have to recognize we're dealing with a post-Holocaust world. We have to recognize that this is a need. People are off the derech. They're not going to be religious if we don't do certain things. We have to recognize the time. We have to be in tune with our communities and the time and generation we're living with. Now we're going to continue. He then says, really, this is so important because if we don't do this, then they're going to get up and they're not going to be religious. They're going to completely leave Torah and mitzvah. They're not going to have any chinuch. They're not going to have any limud kodesh. And we're going to have an entire generation without any Torah, without any Yirat Shamayim. Better that they should have some Torah, some Yirat Shamayim, if it comes with a little coeducation, than for them to intermarry and not have any religiosity. Right? I think we could agree with that in general. It's not such a crazy thought to say, okay, right now we're dealing with a bidyevet situation. People are off the derech. They're not even religious. They don't know what Torah is. They don't know what Yirat Shamayim is. So we need to do something. It's all or nothing. So he basically then says, so that's really where he's going. If we do not accept this educational philosophy from Ashkenaz to have co-education, then we could basically take the entire Jewish community of France and chas v'shalom tear it to pieces. They won't be Jewish next generation. It's now or never. Eit lashot l'Hashem. This is the time we have to do something. Right, and he says, "Hayud Yadut Kvi Matzeh Shel Horat Zekenim V'Yishishim Isu Yishan Hu Beinei Chaim Shel Nizirut Abdidut." In the eyes of the young generation, when you talk to them about what was the sugyo, right? This is what the Gemara says: you have to separate men and women, and this is what the Halach ABC. In their mind, that sounds like it's like a Nazir. It's so old school. It's so, you know, it doesn't even relate to them. They're just going to throw it all away. It doesn't even matter.
That the Yadutim ro'im ke'en gito ruchanisha yamei abinayim sheyesh
lechalet mimenu bekukah. They feel like Torah learning, it's boring, it's not exciting, it's old school, it doesn't relate to them. And he goes even further. Torah learning of this style, he says it's a spiritual get. He uses the term gitin and chalitza. Literally, the way that they were, the other styles of education, to try and, you know, let's go with like a fire and brimstone. You walk into a non-religious school and you start screaming at them, if you keep doing this, you're going to go to Gehenna, and you know this, you're going to burn, and this and that. No one cares about that. They're not going to relate to that anymore. And that's going to only spiritually push them further and further. He literally uses the term, it's like a get. Just like you divorce your wife, Chas v'Shalom. This Talmud Torah was divorcing them spiritually from religion. As ironic as that sounds. And then he continues, and he says basically that we know that generally going on tiulim and spending, you know, playing together, hanging out together is not necessarily a very good thing coeducationally, and it could lead to an avira, an environment where maybe that's not a pure Torah environment. But he says, but we have to have an environment where they love Torah and they love Judaism. If we have an environment where they're going to only hate Torah, they're going to hate Judaism, that's going to only be worse. We have to find kind of somewhat of a balance. So basically keep a Torah environment, but also create an atmosphere of loving Torah. And not just, you know, you have, you know, one of the counselors walking around with like a little 2 meter social distancing stick, and so up, you know, take 2 steps back, you know, this and that, because that's going to only make people feel worse about it. Then he continues, and then this is the last piece before he really gets into the halachic side. And he says, Lefitur, right, according to the way you explain, how does the organization work? Right? When we discuss, 1 second, for those of you that went to co-ed camps, how was co-ed singing done? When you were at an NCSY Shabbaton, Morasha, Moshava, Masora, Lavi, Nesher, I don't know, whatever other camps you were at. How did the co-ed singing, how did the kumzitz happen? What was like the setup of the room? Totally mixed. You know, guy in seat A, girl in seat B, you know, totally intermixed. What about anyone else? Was that everyone's experience, that the co-ed singing was heavily mixed? Okay, so that's two different, we can understand logically that there's going to be a difference in a camp where you have boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, versus a camp where half the room is girls, half the room is guys, and they're not sitting next to each other. That'll affect whether or not you hear the person's voice. If it's the other half of the room, maybe you just hear a conglomerate of voices singing together, whereas if you're sitting next to the girl, you're sitting next to the guy, they clearly know it's you. There's going to be a stronger interaction and recognition of the voice. So he says that when we discuss this specific camp, this organization, Yeshurun, he says that they weren't sitting on the same benches. Ela Shem Sharim Shire Kodesh Psuke Tanakh Vizmiro Chabas Biyakha. They would sing them together in their camps. But realistically speaking, the men were on one side of the room, the girls were on the other side of the room. They did not have or share benches. Not only that, it's not like he says this specific organization, this is where we can argue whether or not this tshuva applies to the modern camps of our generation. He says they had everything was totally separate. They had bunks for the guys, bunks for the girls. They had benches and tables for the guys, benches and tables for the girls. The activities were separate. There were male madrichim, there were female madrichot. There were shirim for the men, shirim for the women. There were activities for the girls, activities for the guys. They never interacted. But when we want to have Shabbos, we want to have a nice Surah Shlishit, we bring the whole camp together, so we keep it totally separate. The entire camp, seemingly, was separate. It was one campus that has guys and girls, but literally, there's no night activity together, there's no swimming together, there's no basketball together, there's no singing together. You know, the only thing was singing together when the room was separate. It was one big room, and we're coming together. So that is, you know, we can understand why the metzias of the camp here that he's discussing, at least from my experience, is not really the same as the different camps that I have, you know, been to, worked at as a camper and as a staff. That, you know, the case is not total separation 100%, with the exception of, you know, shalashudis or the kumzit that's happening. So now he says, let's discuss some of the halachic aspects. First issue we see in coeducation is, as was mentioned before, histaklus. Sometimes, you know, you might see someone, so, you know, you might come to look at someone, and that's going to be inappropriate to start looking at pictures of women. To look at women might lead the guys, and vice versa, to have inappropriate thoughts. And he says, but the Bach tells us, it's not just you're walking on the street and you see a girl, so, you know, that's usher. No, it's you're staring at her. You want to get enjoyment. You want to, you're getting, you know, pleasure from seeing a beautiful woman. You're looking at her, you know, with a mindset of hana. You're trying to get enjoyment. The Yad Malachi tells us in the name of Lada Rishonim, that the Isser is, he's stuck Luke the Habataya Tira. It's not like you just see her. You're literally like, you're looking at her a lot. This is what people I've heard, I don't remember who I heard this from, that the definition of Usser versus Mutter histakless is, do you like the second take? You see them walking by, but do you turn and look a second time? Oh my God. Like you look at the same person two or three times, like, wow, she's so beautiful. That's going to be Usser. But when you just see them walking by, there's no problem in that. And he says, the whole Isser of coeducation, of mixing one with another, is not necessarily because of histakless, we're afraid they're going to see things that are inappropriate, etc. It's that it's going to create a lightheaded environment. It's going to create an atmosphere that's not so serious in the Talmud Torah aspect, so serious in the religious aspect, and that's what we're really worried about. And maybe, he says, maybe the idea of having a machitza, maybe the idea of separating the genders, really only applied in the shul. Maybe, he says here, maybe the idea of Kol Isha and Istaklus and this, we only need a machitza to be set up for davening. When we have, maybe it only applies to Kriyat Shema. Maybe for other things, we have a wedding, we have a levaya, you know, for things like that, maybe we don't need to have separate seating. Maybe we don't need to have a machitza because it only applied to the shul, right? Sugi in the fifth parak of Sukkah was specifically discussing the Beit HaMikdash. How would that apply to non-shul, you know, Mikdash Me'at situations? But then he says, "Aval basvenot shorosh." You write other, you know, things. Kigo and b'shat hachnasat kala. You're having a wedding, a chuppah, or when there's a drasha, they wouldn't be makbid, right? They didn't need a machitza. But then he quotes. We'll discuss this maybe in Hilchos Shabbos. The Mordechai, one of the early Ashkenaz Rishonim, quotes that on Shabbos they used to set up the machitza before the rabbi's drasha. So how could you tell me that it only applies to davening itself? The Mordechai, one of our great Ashkenazi Rishonim, says they put up a machitza for the shir, for the drasha. So Sridi says, but mashma from that Mordechai, they set up the machitza because it was a reshut. It was not obligatory. It was something that they chose to do. If it was obligatory, the Mordechai would say they need to set up the machitza versus they chose to. He says from the Lashon of the Mordechai, it did not seem that they needed to set up the machitza, and he's discussing Hilchos Shabbos. He's not discussing halachot of machitza. He's just saying on Shabbos you could build, you could spread out the machitza, you could be poreis the machitza mitzad tosefet ol arai, and you could set up it's a machitza matera. It's not a machitza matera. How the whole sugi in Shabbos comes up. So he says that was simply a Hilchos Shabbos question. That's not what we're discussing here. So, and seemingly that's going to be proof that it wasn't necessary. And then he continues regarding singing together. That when people came to Berlin, we saw the men and women would sing Zmirot together. And the Haredim, when they came to Berlin at the beginning, they thought it was crazy. They said, Kol B'Isha was that. So they said, maybe we say Kol B'Isha, as we saw in the Makorot, is Dafka for Kriyat Shema. Or are we going to say, no, it's specifically in all of Torah Kula. It's across the board. And he says, the Magen Avraham tells us Kol B'Isha Erva is going to apply even to Nido, not just Eshet Ish, because women who haven't gone to the mikveh, they're going to be considered a Nida, and that's going to apply to the Chazaka for all non-married women today. And he says, the Ran and the Mordechai said, no, it's just Kol Isha. Whereas the Rosh said, no, it's Lav Dafka Kriyat Shema. So there's an argument on the Rosh. Is the Rosh, when he says, it's not just for Kriyat Shema, that the Rosh is saying, even for Kriyat Shema it would be Mutter? Or he's going to say, everything is Usser, even Kriyat Shema. I think Kriyat Shema is one example amongst everything, or even Kriyat Shema is not even part of the problem. And he quotes here that based on the Gra says, no, it's for everything. And then he quotes further. He says, the Rambam and the Tor, where do they quote Hilchos Kol B'Isha Erva? If it was a din specifically for Kriyat Shema, I would have assumed it would be in Halachot of Kriyat Shema or Tfilah. But the fact that the Rambam includes Hilchot Kol B'Isha Erva in Isurei Bia, in forbidden relationships, and the Torah includes it also in Evin Ezer, that clearly indicates to us that it's not just for Kriyat Shema, but it applies across the board. Because the Rambam, otherwise he would have put it in Kriyat Shema, but he puts it in forbidden relationships with other Dinei Arayot, that clearly shows to us what we're discussing. And then he says, the Shulchan Aruch quotes it in both places. The Shulchan Aruch quotes it in Orach Chaim and Siman Ayin Hei, and he quotes it again, he copies the Lashon of the Rambam again in Evin Ezer. So the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, actually quotes it in both places. So he says, Kol B'Isha, when we have our whole Machlok Rishonim, Kriyat Shema, not Kriyat Shema, everything, something, it's going to apply across the board. And then he basically says that there's really not going to be such a difference today. with the right that we said. And then he says, Rav Hildesheimer and Rav Shimshon Raphael-Hirsch themselves, when they were in Frankfurt and in Berlin, they would have these big group communal Zmiro. Rav Hirsch was leading a tish, as odd as that seems, with the men and the women together by the river, he says here. We know, Chazal tell us in numerous places, that when you have two different voices come together, it's as if you don't hear either voice. That's going to be a kula in Hilchos Kol Isha. Maybe if I have a lot of people singing together, there's a chorus, everyone's together, I can't differentiate, I can't discern, oh, that's Rivka's voice, oh, that's Sarah's voice. No, I just hear everyone singing as one conglomerate. That's going to be a kula in Kol Isha. That's going to be a chumra. Maybe in Hilchos Kriyas Torah, there's always a problem when you have like that one guy in Shul who's like reading along to laning really loudly so you can't actually hear the Balkore, you hear him more. Maybe that's a problem of Trei Kali Lo Mishtame, because if you don't even hear the Kriyas Torah, you only hear this guy singing along. This was the kula of Rav Hirsch and Rav Hildesheimer, Trei Kali Lo Mishtame, that we don't hear their voices because it's all one big conglomerate. And then he says, V'atam Yishuim, right, okay? Aval Lo Neche Da'ati Bezeh. But he says, I know that people say this, the Stechemet says this, and Rav Hildesheimer and Rav Hirsch said this, but Trei Kali Lo Mishtame, it's not such a good heter. I don't really like that as a big kula here, and we need to find something else. I'm not going to pask in the Hakel based on Trei Kali Lo Mishtame alone. I need other halachic reasonings besides for just this one. Okay? And then he says, I saw that the Chida also says that when the Shechina's there, then there's not going to be Hirhurim. If it's Divrei Kedusha, this is a lot of discussion in like partnership minyanim, egalitarian minyanim. I'm not like holding in the hack, but I know a lot of people, this Chida is quoted a lot, that when it's Dvarim Bishab Kedusha, you're not going to have Hirhurim. You're in the middle of minyan. You're going to think about the girls. What's wrong with you? You're diving to the Rabbana Shalom. So too, he says, based on the Chida, I'm going to say, you're in the middle of singing, you're having a kumzit, you're being malava the Shabbos Malkita out, you're grasping at the last Kiddush of Shabbos. How could you be thinking about the girls? You're in the middle of Smiros Kodesh. It doesn't even apply. So that's why he says, maybe this is another Svar al-Akel. We have Trei Kali Lo Mishtame. We have Devarim Shibbe Kiddusha. And then he continues and he says, but based on the Rambam, I don't know if I could say this, because the Rambam says, it's even the littlest thing. You even look at, you know, the Esba Ketana, Mashma. Yeah, so he says it seems to be that you need dafka to have, you know, kavana to get enjoyment based on the Rambam and the Eshkol. But he says there were plenty of those who said, no, it's always going to be usher, even if you don't want to have enjoyment, whether that's just for Kriya Shema or not. I think, do I dafka? Is the Kolish only a problem when I'm thinking, oh, what a beautiful voice Sarah has? Or I'm going to say, no, it's just I hear the voice, that's going to be usher on its own. Is it dafka that I need to have the thought process, I need to want the enjoyment, or it's automatic? So that's why he basically says that Zmir and Kodesh in lachush sheit kavnu lahagot lahanot mikolisha. When you're sitting around, you're having Zmirot, this is another Sniflakel, you're singing Zmirot, you're not thinking, oh my God, Sarah has the nicest voice in the world. Wow, Rivka's voice is amazing. Right? You're not thinking that. You're thinking, wow, Vizakeni or Achenu, we're all one. It's amazing. We're one big community. I love God. You know, Kumbaya, it's amazing. It's beautiful. You're not thinking about the other person's voice. So he says, so far we have three svaras to be make out. One is Trei Kali Lo Mishtame. Two is the idea that Dvarim Shebe Kedusha. And three, maybe I need Kavana to have Hana. And he says, maybe because of this, the poskim were asered, specifically Kol Isha Stam, would be that because the song would lead to Hirhurim and Taivo, it's going to lead to different, you know, inappropriate thoughts. But in this case, the Zmir Kodesh are bringing their, it's awakening the Kedusha. So the thoughts of Hirhurim and Isurim are not going to apply because they're so engaged in Dvarim Shebe Kedusha. And he says there's another reason we make out based on the Ramah in Ebenezer Siman Chav Aleph, Shekol She'ena Ose Derechiba Rak Kavanato L'Shem Shemayim Mutter. The Ramah says that if you're doing something not with intent to sin, but you're doing it because you want to get closer to God, that maybe that's mutter. Maybe I could take the Ramah's words there and be Malbishit and apply it here. I'm not planning, right? We're having this big kumzit. We're sitting totally separately. I can't even hear your voice. And I'm doing it L'Shem Shemayim. It has nothing to do with wanting to hear your voice or getting enjoyment from her voice. So then maybe based on that Ramah, we could be Mikael. And then he goes back to what we said at the beginning. He quotes the Gemara in Yuma. Eit lasot l'Hashem efiru toratecha. Right now, it's now or never. We're in the middle of a game-changing situation. We're struggling so much to continue Judaism. And as a result, we have to, right, he says, based, the Gemara explains based off of this. Better that we take out, we erase one letter of the Torah, than we take the entire Torah and throw it in the Geniza. Better that we're making right now to allow this co-education singing, this co-ed kumzitz, than basically having an entire generation of French Jewry go off the derech after the Holocaust. And it seems very, he's basically going back and saying, we have these all the four different svaras lahakel. But none of them, he says, in my opinion, are good enough on their own. I don't think any of these four svaras are good enough on their own, even though other people said them. And he says, the main thing, the main focus is right now, it's do or die. As he ends off the tshuva, and this we'll finish, Sav hasha'ah hu litzor chug shel tzirim v'tzirot datim. The commandment of the hour, the thing right now we must do, this is what we're obligated to do right now. Tzav, from lashon of commandment, from lashon of mitzvah, is that we create a young men and women, a religious group together, a religious youth movement. Tenuat noarim hitlahavut medvekut, a youth movement that's full of energy and connection to God, v'koch mishicha chazak, and it's going to drag people in. You need to have someone who's energetic, who's standing in the middle of the circle, and is getting everyone involved. And we need that, because otherwise the entire generation is going to be lost. And as a result, he says, this is what's going on. This is what's needed, because otherwise they're sick, they're bored of Judaism. They need something to inject a little life, a little energy, a little love, a little connection to Judaism, because they don't have anything. And if we don't do something, we don't connect them in some way, we don't inspire them, then it's going to be all lost. This is what we need. Zerem shalahat nafshi, you need a energetic spark of spirituality. Shalruach ra'anin v'chai, you need a refreshing and a new and a lively energy that's going to go through them. Shebekocho l'chvoshet levavot l'romemam et nafshot hanechshalot. You need something that's strong enough to capture their hearts, to raise them up, to uplift their souls that are currently struggling. Shehagaguim l'chayei kedusha shel yahadut tahora od lo memu bekerban. The love, the truth of Torah is something that's so inspiring, something that they love, something that they want. But they just don't know it. It's missing. And we need to do something to turn them on. We need a light to flip the switch. We need to ignite their souls. That pinta liyid is there. There's something in there that's waiting for Torah to come and call out to them. But they don't even know it yet. They don't know what they're missing. We need to get them going. We need to ignite them. We need to light them on fire. Rak mizgeret zu shel irgun yeshuru nefshar limshoch et hanar shel olam lo yavo lemakom acher. This organization, Yeshurun, the co-ed organization is the only thing that's going to pull them. You're never going to get a co-ed kid to show up to an all-boys, you know, Torah learning environment. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to get a kid who's not religious at all to show up to go sitting in a kollel for a week or two, and now they're going to be religious. You need it's just too big of a jump. It's not something they relate to. You need something that the generation can relate to. And yes, he says, there's different svaras to be made, and he says, I don't really like them. So I'm going to have four different svaras to be mekel. I'm going to combine them as, this is a snip lahakel, this is a snip lahakel, this is a snip lahakel, this is a snip lahakel. But at the end of the day, the major push, the major driving force and the push is the generation needs this. We're post-Holocaust France. We're a generation that people are not relating to Torah. They don't know Torah, they don't love Torah. They need something that's going to connect them to Torah, and we need to do whatever we can to light them on fire. And this is why he then ends off, v'rak b'mizgeret zu yeshnam sikuyim l'sagseg chadash shel ruach hadati l'pu'ula chinuchit koveshet v'soletet derech. Only through this way are we going to even have a fighting chance to try and inspire them and to get them going in the ways of Torah. And that's why I said at the beginning, this Shri Diyesh, in my opinion, is quoted very often in, though the Shri Diyesh says you can have co-ed singing. But the Shri Diyesh, when you look at his tshuva inside, is talking about at least two different points, in my opinion, that I don't personally think, there's other reasons, whatever, not getting to the sugya of camps today, but practically speaking, what the Shri Diyesh, what Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg writes directly here, in my mind, does not really apply so well to the modern Orthodox camps and schools that we're dealing with, and organizations that we're dealing with so much now. Because, one, he says, we're having it's totally separate. They have separate bunks, they have separate benches, they have separate activities, they have separate shurim, they have separate tiulim. Anyone here went to a co-ed modern Orthodox high school? Classes were separate or together? Okay, so often there's a mixture. The lockers are in the same hallway, so classes are together, classes aren't together. You know, the machloket Kushner versus Frisch, is it everything's together? Is it just Judaic studies versus secular studies? So there's, you know, et cetera, a lot of different things like that, how we're going to apply the different, you know, the different relationships. But practically speaking, we're not dealing with something that's 100% separate, with the exception of the Zmira. We're getting together for one Kumzitz at the end of Shabbos, and other than that, we have separate chadarochos, we have separate bunks, everything's different. That's one thing that, from my experience at least, does not really apply to most of our camps and schools today. And the other thing is, he's saying, if it were not for this, these kids would be 100% off the derech. These are kids who are not religious at all. These are kids who do not know anything about Torah. They need some excitement. They need some engagement. So yes, I'm familiar that many modern Orthodox kids today in high school are not inspired to learning. They don't love Torah. They don't love Judaism. But their background is not, if they don't go to this co-ed Shabbat, if they don't have a co-ed Kumzitz, they're automatically going to intermarry because Judaism means nothing to them. I don't think that's the situation, at least in 2020 America. Today, that's not necessarily, we haven't gotten to that point where if not for this, everyone's going to intermarry. So maybe that's going to be true. The Sri Deish Tshuva would apply to cases of, not, you know, kids who aren't religious, right? Rav Sobolovsky's long list of TJJ kulas, for those that are familiar with NTSY. Okay? There's things that are going to apply. We're going to have to say, Eit Lasod Lashem, if we don't allow those non-religious kids to go swimming during the night, you're going to tell a non-religious kid, oh yeah, we're going on a tiol, there's a nice mayan over there, you can't jump in the water because 2,000 years ago there was a Chorban Beit HaMikdash, the kid's going to say, what's wrong with you people? There's a certain point where you have to recognize who we're dealing with and what we're dealing with. And so I think there's a drastic difference between when we're dealing with kids who really have no religious background. They are totally not religious, their families aren't religious, they will, you know, almost for sure intermarry statistically, versus someone who grew up modern Orthodox. Just an interesting discussion how, as I mentioned before, this is a tshuva that, in my opinion, is often misquoted and taken out of context, but is a fascinating tshuva and one that is quoted very often and a fantastic and important tshuva when dealing with educational discussions and setting up institutions and how we run our community. Bezrat Hashem, we should not have to deal with the struggles of people, you know, intermarrying and going off the derech, and we should be zocha that we should only continue to ignite people's, you know, Esha Torah. We should only continue to inspire and to love learning and to engage in Talmud Torah.